In 2012, Washington State voted to regulate, tax, and legalize marijuana. I was for it. Well, the evidence keeps coming in. Our new approach is working. Month by month, tax dollars are going to schools and police, not the drug cartels. Wasteful arrests are way down, DUIs are down, drug prevention programs are getting funds. Strict regulations are working. Here, it's really better already. It's your vote, not mine, but it's working here.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Ruff Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Ruff Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, October 21st, 2014, and it's got to be 14 days until we legalize marijuana in the state of Oregon, in the state of Alaska, in the District of Columbia, all three. We're looking for marijuana legalization. We want to get the hat trick this year, folks. Also want to add to that Florida in the medical marijuana column, Guam in the medical marijuana column, and so much more. Our marijuana election night 2014 coverage is just getting started. We will be there Tuesday, November 4th, live from the Measure 91 campaign headquarters here in Oregon. And we have got over 45 marijuana votes to report to you this coming election season. We start all the way out in Guam, where Proposal 14A for medical marijuana will be decided by 2 a.m. Pacific time. In Florida, Amendment 2 for medical will be decided by 5 p.m. Pacific time. Robert Platshorn will be joining us live to bring us all of the numbers from Florida. In Lewiston and South Portland, Maine, they'll be decided by 5 p.m. Pacific for legalization in those cities. In Massachusetts, there's 8 public policy questions on the board that will be decided by 5 p.m. Pacific. In Michigan, there are 11 cities that are voting on decriminalization, and we'll know by 5 p.m. Pacific. Rick Thompson from Michigan Normal will be joining us to give us all the numbers from Michigan. In Washington, D.C., we'll know by 5 p.m. Pacific if Initiative 71 has made Washington, D.C. legal, and Eric Altieri from Normal will be joining us. In Colorado, Lakewood and Palisade are voting whether to allow pot shops. We'll know that by 6 p.m. Pacific. Our own Priscilla Seibin will be joining us to talk about that. In New Mexico, Bernalillo and Santa Fe counties are voting on decriminalization. We'll know that by 6 p.m. Pacific. In California, they're voting on Measure 47 to defelonize possession of drugs. We'll know by 8 p.m. Pacific on that one. Plus, we've got votes going on in 13 counties and cities in California having to do with medical marijuana cultivation and dispensary bans. We'll bring you the results on all of those. Also at 8 p.m. Pacific, Oregon's Measure 91 will be decided. Washington's advisory vote number 8, which would eliminate a tax preference for marijuana, will be decided. And then Alaska will wind up our coverage at 9 p.m. Pacific when we'll get the voting results on their ballot Measure 2 to legalize in the state of Alaska. If you'd like to be a sponsor of our marijuana election night coverage, we're expecting 50,000 viewers. If you'd like to be a sponsor and get your advertising, your brand, your service noticed by the people that are getting the latest information on marijuana elections, just get in touch with me, Russ at RadicalRuss.com, right here at 420radio.org. All right, on today's show, we have got a debate happening tonight in Portland, Oregon on marijuana legalization. We're going to run down the no on Measure 91 talking points you will probably hear. You can catch that debate live at OregonLive.com/marijuana starting at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time tonight. It's Josh Marquis, the Clatsop County District Attorney, we've been tracking with our records requests against Anthony Johnson, the Chief Petitioner of Measure 91. Also, we'll have some time to debunk some reefer madness coming out of the great state of Maine, and we've got a look at Facebook versus the Drug Enforcement Administration on their use of fake profiles in drug stings. We'll do some drug war data mining to show you how to get around the TEDS A database for drug rehabs to find out why people are being sentenced to marijuana and how many in your state. And we'll also have the 420 radio news coming up right after this first break. We're going to tell you about the debate in Oregon tonight. Colorado is backtracking on that edibles ban. Weed can cause a secondhand drug test failure. A Beaumont, Texas woman's kicked out of her church for supporting legalization. And we've got some bad news to report out of Maine, where people who support marijuana legalization are kind of making us look bad. All that is coming up on the Russ Belville Show. Stay tuned.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups.
I don't care for marijuana, but I do care about my family and their future. The system's not working now, so I think I'm voting yes on 91. Now, one small mistake getting caught with little marijuana can ruin a life. A record, can't get loans, jobs, or credit, that's wrong. Measure 91 will regulate marijuana and generate tax revenue dedicated to police and schools, and let police protect us from serious crimes. Yes on 91 is a better approach.
Stony Sundays, replaying Monday at 1 Pacific on 4.
I'm Richard Harris. I directed Oregon's Division of Addictions and Mental Health and led drug treatment programs for years. I can tell you that treating marijuana use as a crime, arresting thousands for marijuana use, is a complete failure. That's why I'm supporting Measure 91. By regulating marijuana for adults and taxing it, we support drug treatment, prevention, schools, and police. Measure 91 means more treatment and less wasteful prosecution. It's a better approach.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, October 21st, 2014. The only televised debate for the measure to legalize marijuana in Oregon takes place tonight, and it will be streamed live starting at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time at oregonlive.com/marijuana. Chief Petitioner Anthony Johnson will represent the Yes on 91 campaign, and Clatsop County District Attorney Josh Marquis will represent the No on 91 campaign. The debate comes on the news that the campaign for Oregon's marijuana legalization measure this weekend reported receiving another $800,000 from two out-of-state groups tied to wealthy donors. Drug Policy Action, which has received major funding from billionaire currency trader George Soros, contributed $500,000 to the Yes on 91 campaign. Separately, New Approach PAC, a Washington, D.C.-based political action committee tied to the family of the late billionaire Peter Lewis, gave $300,000 to the Measure 91 effort. Both contributions were reported just before midnight on Friday. Colorado health officials on Monday backtracked on their call to ban almost all recreational marijuana edibles in the state just hours after the recommendation for such a prohibition surfaced publicly. The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment backed away from its recommendation for a ban after outraged marijuana industry representatives argued that state voters made all forms of marijuana legal in 2012. The Associated Press's Kristen Wyatt reported that a health department official said a ban was, quote, not our intent, end quote. Colorado State Representative Jonathan Singer told Huffington Post Live on Tuesday that state health officials ultimately did the right thing by retreating from their initial call to ban almost all marijuana edible products because such a ban is, quote, unconstitutional. Quote, the State Department of Public Health took it one step too far, end quote, Singer said. As weed has gotten more potent, scientists decided to investigate if secondhand smoke from strong strains of cannabis could lead to positive drug test results. So researchers paired several regular pot smokers and non-smokers and put them in a sealed compartment together for an hour, while one smoked a joint containing a relatively strong strain of marijuana. The results, published this month in the Journal of Analytical Toxicology, found urine levels of inactive metabolites surpassed typically detectable levels of 50 nanograms per milliliter in only one experiment participant. And this happened during a brief window 4 to 6 hours after exposure. Using a more sensitive test, however, which is not usually employed in the workplace, scientists could detect blood THC levels above 20 nanograms per milliliter in several participants in the hours after exposure. But these concentrations dip below this threshold for all participants within 24 hours, according to the study conducted by researchers at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and elsewhere. A Beaumont, Texas woman claims she has been cast out of her church for her use of medicinal marijuana. Faith Bodle said she uses cannabis extract, an oil derived from marijuana, to treat illnesses like degenerative spine disease, congestive heart failure, and arthritis. Bodle said fellow church members at Beaumont Seventh-day Adventist Church grew concerned after seeing her support the use of marijuana on a report on Beaumont television station KBMT. KBMT first spoke to Bodle at the arraignment of Jeremy Bork, who is facing trial on marijuana charges. Bodle was there showing her support for the legalization and medicinal use of cannabis. She said her pastor sent a letter calling on her to stop using and promoting marijuana. And 6 weeks later, the congregation decided to revoke her membership. I guess their church doesn't believe Genesis chapter 1, verse 29. Police are investigating after several anti-pot legalization signs in South Portland, Maine, have been vandalized or stolen. The signs, which read, "SoPo says no to pot," only went back up on Thursday, according to pot opponents. Within minutes of being placed around South Portland, most of the signs had been stolen, they said. Volunteers replaced some of the stolen signs, which were then stolen a second time. The group, Smart Approaches of Marijuana Maine, said none of the other election signs in South Portland have been touched. They claim the signs opposing marijuana legalization are being specifically targeted. The referendum question to legalize a small amount of pot is only on the ballot in South Portland and Lewiston. A judge rejected a request by pro-marijuana activists that would have forced the town of York to put a legalization question on the November ballot. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, October 21st, 2014. I'm Russ Belville.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green.
I'm Pete Tupmark. I spent 33 years in law enforcement, from deputy sheriff to sergeant, working 10 hours a day protecting Oregonians. Last year in Oregon, there were 13,000 citations and arrests for marijuana. That takes time. Time better spent solving murders, rape cases, finding missing children. The system is broken. Measure 91 regulates marijuana for adults, so police have time to fight serious, violent, and unsolved crimes. It's about time.
Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers thinks it's okay for medical marijuana patients like Larry Harvey to go to prison and lose their constitutional rights. Even though Washington has had a medical marijuana law protecting patients like Larry since 1998, on May 30th, Congresswoman McMorris Rogers voted against an amendment that would protect Washington patients.
I voted to send Kathy McMorris Rogers to Congress, and she voted to send me to prison.
Is the congresswoman out of touch with Washington?
Measure 91 means regulating and legalizing marijuana for adults, freeing up time and generating revenue so police can better protect us from serious, violent, and unsolved crimes. The system needs changing. Yes, on 91, it's about time.
Welcome back, everyone. 13 after the hour, and time for us to go behind the headlines for an interesting case in cyberspace going on between Facebook and the Drug Enforcement Administration. It's been reported on CNN Money and other outlets that Facebook has sent a letter to the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration demanding that agents stop impersonating users on the social network. This news comes as a shock to many Facebook users, many people in the marijuana community, who may have been unaware that the DEA and law enforcement were using fake Facebook profiles in order to ensnare cannabis consumers. Recently, Facebook made a change that requires users to use their real names. And I've had a number of my listeners who have disappeared from Facebook telling me that they had to cancel their Facebook accounts, that Facebook was making them quit. One of them, our friend Pookie from Ohio, they made her kill her Pookie Facebook account because it wasn't her real name. So this is something that Facebook users have been aware of, and apparently it also applies to law enforcement. It all derives from the case of a woman named Sandra Arquette. And she was busted in a conspiracy, a drug trafficking ring. And according to the authorities, according to the DEA, she was arrested in 2010 and was part of a cocaine distribution ring. She pled guilty and she got probation. And part of that was that she cooperated and became an informant for the DEA and, you know, basically ratted out some of the other people in the cocaine conspiracy. So the cops, the DEA, took her cell phone and used her cell phone to create a fake profile for her on Facebook. And on that fake profile, even uploaded photos with her and her son, and another photo of her alone in her bra and panties. Right. So Facebook's posting these not safe for work selfies of the lady pretending to be her to ensnare other drug users, other people that might be out there. So the DEA is being sued now. Sandra is suing the DEA, but the Justice Department is backing up the DEA, of course, saying that the federal agents have the right to do such things. According to the legal filings, the prosecutor, the federal prosecutor, says, quote, she implicitly consented by granting access to the information stored in her cell phone and by consenting to the use of that information to aid in an ongoing criminal investigation. But that's a far cry. You know, giving someone the right to look through your cell phone is more of a passive receiving of information. What the DEA has done here is actively pushed information into the public. And to me, that seems like quite a different thing. And it does as well to privacy researcher Runa Sandvik. She's an advisor for the Freedom of Press Foundation. And she said it this way. It's one thing to strike a deal and become an informant. It's another to lose complete control of your online identity. Quote, isn't this the definition of identity theft? End quote. And exactly. And this is something where our laws are quite behind our technology, as they usually are when we're dealing with information technology. It's not quite the same. You know, we just recently had a Supreme Court case that decided that cops had to get a warrant to search through our cell phones. Prior to that, cops were able to, if they had arrested you, to take your cell phone, and if you didn't have a swipe pattern or a password, to just start rifling through your cell phone, finding out who all your contacts were, looking through all your emails, looking through all your text messages, looking at your photos, and so forth. And the justices rightly decided that this isn't like just finding a, let's say, a notebook with drug proceed information written on it when you go and search someone, right? Your cell phone is you. It's your life. It's your very identity. And they said that's a higher bar you have to clear, legally speaking, if you want to search through that. I should think that our online profiles and our online identities would be the same way. You know, technically, the way the laws have been written, it might just be information retrieval and a bunch of bits and bytes on a machine. But functionally speaking, what our online profiles and identities are the representations of us in cyberspace. They are us. And Facebook seems to agree. In the letter from Facebook, they have said, this is security officer Joe Sullivan, the top chief security guy at Facebook, says, quote, the DEA's deceptive actions threaten the integrity of our community. Using Facebook to impersonate others abuses that trust and makes people feel less safe and secure when using our service, end quote. The letter also goes on to tell tell the DEA that they need to shut down any other of these accounts that they may be using and promise that they won't be doing it again. We've got a copy of the letter from Facebook. It is available online through the CNN Money link. And just reading through it, they point out that they talk about the, let's see. Moreover, our terms and community standards, which the DEA agent had to acknowledge and agree to when registering for a Facebook account, expressly prohibits the creation and use of fake accounts. Quote, claiming to be another person, creating a false presence for an organization, or creating multiple accounts undermines community and violates Facebook terms. Quote, you will not provide any false personal information on Facebook or create an account for anyone other than yourself without permission. Quote, you will not post content or take any action on Facebook that infringes or violates someone else's rights or otherwise violates the law. Quote, you will not use Facebook to do anything unlawful, misleading, malicious, or discriminatory. Now, I really hope that this has some effect, but practically speaking, I don't know what it could. What is the DEA going to be worried that Facebook's going to slap them on the wrist? That maybe the DEA agents' own Facebook accounts might be taken down? That they might lose all the likes they've built up on the fake profiles that they've created so far? I don't think any of that really matters to the DEA. And it's time for our Congress and lawmakers to step up and have better definitions of what our online privacy means.
I know nothing. Nothing.
A little early there, Liebermater. I still had another 10 seconds. I hate it when the machines start to think for themselves. As long as Liebermater's not connected to Skynet, I think I'll be okay. Hey, it's 420 in Denver, so if you're in the Rocky Mountain High, it's time to get Rocky Mountain High. We'll be back right after this.
Radio. Tune in, turn on, get
high. How desperate is the No on 91 campaign to scare you about marijuana?
A couple of things that he talks about is the advocates of this measure 91 want you to believe that marijuana has medicinal value, which is couldn't be anything further from the truth.
The truth is regulation is a better approach than prohibition. Vote yes on 91. This advertisement produced by the Russ Belville Show and is not sponsored or endorsed by the Yes on Measure 91 campaign. Weed Nerd with Subcool and Ms. Jill from the Emerald Triangle of Northern California. Replaying Tuesdays at 1 Pacific on 420radio.org. It was a nightmare scenario last May for one Southern Oregon woman. It's 4 in the morning and someone's trying to break in.
911 emergency. My ex-boyfriend is trying to break into my house. He put me in the hospital a few weeks ago, and I've been trying to keep him away.
But because of budget cuts, the sheriff's office is only open during weekday business hours.
I don't have anybody to send out there. So if he comes inside the residence and assaults you, can you ask him to go away? Or
he did break into the home, and he did rape and choke this woman. Meanwhile, it was announced that the Oregon Sheriff's Association made a $100,000 donation to the campaign against Measure 91, the initiative to legalize marijuana. So, there's enough money to protect people from marijuana, but not rapists? Measure 91 devotes 35% of tax revenues from marijuana sales to state and local police. Vote yes on Measure 91. A message from the Russ Belville Show, not endorsed or sponsored by the Measure 91 campaign. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining. Welcome back, everybody. 23 after the hour, and today we're going to take a look at some drug war data mining on drug rehab. We get a lot of talking points from the campaigns against marijuana legalization about how many people are in rehab, and I thought it'd be nice to get the facts. I've posted the link in our chat room. It's right here at the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Agency, and the data we're looking at today comes from the Treatment Episode Dataset, or TEDS-A, a series of admission data from 2012 all the way back to 1992 that can be looked at and researched in order to find out some of this information. Now, the TEDS-A screen, when you get there on the left, is going to have a series of books that contain all the variables that you can make use of. And I often tell people when you're using this, if you don't know what something does, just use that in the row variable and it'll tell you. For example, maybe you'd like to figure out how many teenagers versus how many adults end up in rehab. Well, for that, you need to know what the age variable does. The age variable, we can put that into the row, and it's not what you might think it would be, like someone's age 12, someone's age 16, someone's age 30, but it's actually a series of categories. When you run the data, you find that people aged 12 to 14 are category 2. People aged 15 to 17 are category 3, and so forth. So if you wanted adults 21 and over, you need categories 5 through 12. So, knowing that, we can then start putting together some other options here. For example, maybe we'd like to find out how many people are in rehab for marijuana. This will come under another book, The Substances of Abuse. And there's two different choices, original variables or created variables. Created variables are usually more interesting because they use logic to determine, you know, various things that the original variables couldn't tell you. And the most useful one for us is the one called MARFLAG, M-A-R-F-L-G. Running that MARFLAG will tell you whether or not someone's in rehab for marijuana. Now, they may be in rehab for other drugs as well. They could be in for up to three other substances that are coded. But this will tell you if someone's marijuana only or marijuana in conjunction with other drugs. And we find
38% of the people in rehab for marijuana, or 667,000 people, are there with marijuana reported. Now, if you can take those variables and then start cross-referencing them, making rows and columns out of them, you can find some other interesting information. There's another variable that we can find that is up here under referral sources that's called P source, which is the principal source of referral. What sent you to rehab? If we put P source up there in the row, we can run that and find that 35%, or about 36% of people in rehab, referred themselves to rehab. They chose to go to rehab. And about 34% were forced there by the courts or the criminal justice system or from a DUI. So it's about even between people who are forced into rehab by the criminal justice system versus people who choose to go to rehab on their own versus people who go to rehab because of all these other conditions. But things change quite a bit when you throw marijuana into the mix. By adding MARFLAG to the column, we can determine, FLG I should type, we can determine exactly what is the source of rehab for people who had marijuana versus people who didn't have marijuana in their diagnosis. When we run that table, we get the shocking bit of information that among people who did not report marijuana, 42% referred themselves, 28% were forced there. And that's just about flipped if someone did report marijuana. 43% forced there, 26% went on their own. This shows you why the rehab people are so keen to keep marijuana illegal. Now, if we narrow that down even further, remember the age field that we worked with earlier. Age 5 through 12 shows us all the people that are above the age of 21. So now we're looking at how many adults were flagged for marijuana and what sent them to rehab. This will show us even more shocking results. 42% forced, 28% chose. And you can start narrowing that down by state by using another selection filter. In this case, we're going to use OR state 1. And that just means the state of Oregon, and the one means yes, right? So we're going to find the source of referral for people that had marijuana in the state of Oregon who were adults age 21 and older. Running that table will give us the results showing that in the state of Oregon, 60% of adults who have gone to rehab for marijuana were forced there by the criminal justice system, compared to 23% who chose to go there on their own.
420 Radio, the world's voice. A mom and grandma from No on Measure 91 explains why to vote yes on Measure 91.
I see what's happening with marijuana. The kids are telling me. They say within 5 minutes they can get marijuana. It's much easier than tobacco or alcohol to get into their hands.
Because drug dealers don't check ID, vote yes on Measure 91. This advertisement produced by the Russ Belville Show and is not sponsored or endorsed by the Yes on Measure 91 campaign.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at norml.org or call toll-free 888.
Treating marijuana as a crime in Oregon has failed. Police are spending way too much time working on simple marijuana possession cases. Too many people are being busted. Oregon wastes millions of taxpayer dollars while illegal drug dealers are making a huge untaxed profit. But after Measure 91 passes, we'll have a better approach, a smarter approach, like what's happening in Washington, where marijuana-related arrests have plummeted. Oregon police will be able to refocus their precious and limited resources on serious crime, and Oregon's Measure 91 can save and generate millions of dollars. Oregon needs a better approach to marijuana. Vote yes on Measure 91, paid for by Yes on 91.
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he dropped dead from fright.
You know, it's not easy countering 7 decades of propaganda in a 2-hour show, but let's try. It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Reefer Madness Debunked.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Half past the hour, and today in Reefer Madness Debunked, we've got this great article. This is written by Stephanie Anderson. It's in the Portland Press Herald in Maine, where, of course, the cities of South Portland and Lewiston will be voting on marijuana legalization, joining the city of Portland, which has already passed it. Now, these are city ordinances, so there still is question as to whether or not they would have really any practical effect, since the state law would still ban marijuana. But what these are really doing is setting the groundwork for 2016, when Marijuana Policy Project will probably have a marijuana initiative for legalization in the state of Maine. So I wanted to go through this and just kind of debunk some of the general reefer madness here, because it applies to any state and any marijuana legalization for the most part. The piece is entitled, "Untruths About Marijuana Point to Serious Implications of Legalizing It. Before Maine Jumps Off the Legalization Cliff as Colorado Did, Persistent Myths Must Be Dispelled." Now, first, I gotta love the framing of jumping off the legalization cliff, as if, like, what we're walking along in prohibition is like, what, the prohibition plateau? I guess. I don't know. That somehow what we're doing now under prohibition is working, is somehow acceptable. You know, any negative stat you want to bring up about marijuana is a negative stat that exists in the arena of prohibition, in the policy of prohibition. The bad things that you know about marijuana, how easy it is for kids to get, is because of prohibition. How potent it has become is because of prohibition. Surreptitious ways to be able to consume it is because of prohibition. Now, the writer begins by saying, 9 months later, Colorado's governor is calling the whole thing reckless. Now, she wrote this today. And the day after the Colorado governor was quoted as saying legalizing marijuana was reckless, he recanted that. He took it back. So it's interesting to note that these prohibitionists don't ever correct themselves when there's an obvious correction to be made. The governor no longer thinks that it was reckless. But anyway, let's go through, because she's listed what she considers 6 myths about marijuana legalization. And I just thought we would tackle those. So here we go. Myth number 1, you can go to jail for smoking pot. Wrong. Nobody is incarcerated in Maine for smoking marijuana. It's not a crime. You can't be arrested, go to jail, or get a criminal conviction. And this is the same argument we're hearing in Oregon, because we're a decrim state. But Maine, they're even more decrim than we are. Possession of 2.5 ounces, which is a lot of pot, is a civil offense like running a stop sign. Oh, by the way, this Stephanie Anderson's a district attorney, in case you couldn't guess. So the argument that we will reduce our prison population by legalizing marijuana for recreational use is frankly absurd and outright dishonest. Well, no, it's not, Ms. District Attorney, because you know damn well that decriminalized marijuana is still contraband marijuana. And as long as marijuana is contraband, that opens up all sorts of legal avenues for the police to harass, search, and seize the property of people. As long as marijuana is contraband, people can be messed with for it. And this civil offense like running a stop sign, every time they try to minimize what the ticket is for marijuana, it just opens up the question, if it's no big deal, why is it illegal? See, we know why there is a ticket for running a stop sign. Because if you didn't ticket people who ran stop signs, they'd all run stop signs and we wouldn't have safety. We'd have people running into each other in intersections. We have tickets for speeding because we know speeding is dangerous and can kill people. Why is there a ticket for having marijuana? They have yet, it's just in their minds, it's bad and it's always been bad and it's always been illegal, but nobody ever stops to question them as to why do we have this ticket in the first place? What is it that we accomplish by having the ticket? And any answer they give can be easily disproven. We have the ticket to make sure people don't use it. Really? Then why are so many people using it? We have this ticket to send the right message to the kids. Really? Then why do the kids use it so much? No argument works. Her myth number two, it's no worse than alcohol or cigarettes, except that it stays in your body for 30 days and contains over 400 compounds compared to alcohol's one. Well, good thing she's a district attorney and not a chemist, because alcohol actually contains quite a bit of compounds, more than just one. I mean, if you're drinking straight, you know, ethanol, if you're drinking straight grain alcohol, then there's only one component, and that one component will kill you. No. Modern alcoholic drinks have alcohol and water and flavor and lots of stuff in them. A cup of coffee has over 800 chemicals in it. Many of those chemicals in a cup of coffee are carcinogenic. But she goes on to say that it has 50 to 70% more carcinogens than tobacco, and smokers of marijuana get four times more tar in their lungs per puff than smokers of tobacco do. Cancer, cancer, cancer. It suppresses the immune system. All right, look, lady. Just because something has carcinogens in it doesn't mean that it's cancerous. I know, it sounds weird, doesn't it? But it's true. Think of it like this. Water consists of two elements, oxygen and hydrogen. Hydrogen is extremely flammable and explosive. But nobody is going to tell you that water is flammable and explosive. You know why? Because chemistry matters. Chemistry matters. Any burning vegetable matter has hydrocarbons in it that are shown to be carcinogenic by themselves. But marijuana smoke also has a little thing in it called THC, which has been shown to have a protective effect against cancer. Dr. Donald Tashkin did the longest case control study on this, 30 years worth of data, and found, and he was trying to find the link between lung cancer and marijuana. Not only did he not find a link, he found that marijuana smokers had less incidence of lung cancer than even non-smokers did. But really, the simplest response to anybody that says the 400 chemicals in marijuana and carcinogens is to say, really? Can you show me the cancer ward full of pot smokers? You're never going to find it. Where are the bodies? Number three myth, she says, is that it's not addictive. And then she goes to point out that 78% of children aged 12 to 17 admitted to publicly funded treatment centers in the U.S. were there for marijuana dependence. No, 78% of the children aged 12 to 17 admitted to publicly funded treatment centers in the U.S. were there because they got caught. They got caught with marijuana. That's why they're there. I just went through the drug war data mining showing you how, unlike all other drugs, if you're caught with marijuana, the chance that the criminal justice system puts you in rehab is far greater than alcohol, tobacco, or any other drug. Number four myth, she says we can tax it and solve budget problems, and then she drags out the Sabbat conjecture. We've already learned a hard lesson from alcohol and tobacco. For every $1 gained in tax revenue, $10 is lost in health, legal, social, and regulatory costs. Right. Because alcohol and tobacco are, say it with me, kids, toxic and addictive. They lead to disease and death, violence and cancer. Marijuana leads to an appreciation of jazz. A recent study, well, not recent, 2002 study in the Journal of Addictions up in British Columbia there, found that the healthcare and regulatory cost of a cannabis smoker in Canada was $20 per smoker per year. $20. I bet you could come up with $20 worth of marijuana tax per smoker in one freaking month. Much less a year. And besides, if there's a cost to marijuana, we're paying it now. It's not like marijuana doesn't exist. Whatever cost does exist for marijuana, we're paying it now, and we're getting nothing in taxes, and we're paying for a prohibition that doesn't work. Her myth number five says it's working great in Colorado. Not true. What's up in Colorado? Pot-related violent crimes, homicides linked to pot, driving under the influence of marijuana, and stone driving deaths. Look, folks, here's what they're pointing out. Now that marijuana is legal, when you look at statistics, you find people that use marijuana. You know, I bet you're going to find a whole lot more violent crimes and robberies and driving under the influence of people who are married gay people now. I'll bet you're going to find a whole lot more married gay people in the crime statistics, and the death statistics. Now, does that mean legalizing gay marriage made all these things happen? No, it means that now there is such a thing as gay marriage. You can be a gay married person and you start showing up on statistics. And that's what's happening with marijuana, folks. Now that you can be a marijuana smoker, some people are. And furthermore, she's just outright lying here. The violent crimes have gone down in Denver. The tourism's gone up. They've made $45 million in revenue. They've created 18,000 jobs. She also worries about the marijuana-infused edibles because pot is way stronger than it used to be when we were baby boomers in college. And hashish oil-infused gummy bears and Swedish fish are indistinguishable from the safe ones. Also up as welfare fraud as EBT cards are being used to buy pot. Man, I hate that line about the welfare for weed. Look, if there's a sick person out there and they're using their welfare card to get weed, they are saving us money in healthcare costs in the long run. I really don't have a problem with it. And her final myth, we'll regulate it like alcohol and keep it out of the hands of kids. We all know how well that's working, she says. Well, yeah, we do know how well that's working. See, these people keep wanting to pretend as if it's not working because lots of people do it and don't compare it to the past. They don't compare it to any of the data that we have. In 1985, when I was in high school, 90% of 12th graders had tried alcohol. Today, 70% of 12th graders have tried alcohol. In 1991, the earliest I can get data for this, 54% of 12th graders drank monthly. Today, it's 39% drink monthly. Went down 15 points. Binge drinking among 12th graders in 1991 was 30%. Today, it's 22%. But really, anything you need to know about this woman's opinion is pretty much given to you when she mentions the amotivational syndrome associated with marijuana. Yeah, let's ask Michael Phelps about amotivational syndrome. How badly smoking a bong affected his ability to get gold medals. Hey, that's not the only news out of Maine. I also got news out of Maine today that the head of the legalization campaign challenged a police chief to go shot for shot. He'd take a hit of weed for every shot of alcohol the guy drank. He'd meet him at high noon and see which one of them was still standing by the time the debate happened. Of course, the anti-pot people are mad about that. Challenging cops to drinking contests. What kind of message does that send to the children? How about one that marijuana is far safer and he doesn't dare take that bet? All right, we're back with some more Reefer Madness, this time from Oregon, when we return.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org. At Royal Queen Seeds, we've got premium feminized cannabis seeds, including auto-flowering varieties for the medical cannabis user. We've got bulk shipments available and new CBD oil. Plus, we accept payment in Visa, MasterCard, and Bitcoin, as well as other methods. Check out our website at royalqueenseeds.com for more information. We are located in the Netherlands, and we have online grow experts ready to help you now at royalqueenseeds.com. In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
This is crack, rock cocaine. It isn't glamorous or cool or kid stuff. It's the most addictive kind of cocaine, and it can kill you. What's really bad is nobody knows how much it takes. So every time you use it, you risk dying. It isn't worth it. Look, everybody wants to be cool. But doing it with crack isn't just wrong. It could be dead wrong.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420 Radio.
The pistachio. Green, natural, and available without prescription in all 50 states. He's fine.
The truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Homosexuality.
Down the centuries, you have slurred the meaning of the words "we, the people."
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You could ask yourself a question: do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 47 after the hour. And if you missed earlier, we mentioned at the beginning of the show that the Great Oregon Pot Debate is taking place tonight. It is televised live on our ABC affiliate, K2, or as I like to call them, KATU, K-A-T-U here in Portland, Channel 2. I'll be DVRing that as well. Also, it is streamed live. So those of you listening on the internet or watching on the internet and you are not in the Portland area, if you want to see the debate, it will be streamed live at OregonLive.com/marijuana. That's OregonLive.com/marijuana. For NOON 91, Clatsop County District Attorney Josh Marquis will be taking the stage. He's the man we've been doing all the open records requests on. And then Anthony Johnson, the chief petitioner of Yes on 91, will take our side. And no, I've got a question from Speed Limit in the chat room. In Maine, the head of the campaign for legalization has challenged the police chief to a hit-for-shot duel because the police chief said that it was ridiculous to say that marijuana was safer than alcohol. So the campaign head said, I challenge you to a duel. I'll take a hit of marijuana for every shot of alcohol you take, and we'll see who's standing by the time the 7 o'clock debate comes up. I just got a tweet from Scott Gagnon, who's the head of Project Sam in Maine. He says that's going over like a lead balloon, and I'm sure among his friends it is, because it points out the hypocrisy that marijuana is far safer than alcohol, and yet they want to treat its users and it as if it's far more dangerous. And nowhere is that more clear than in the talking points of Measure 91's opponents, the No on 91 campaign that is funded 98.6% by the Oregon Sheriffs and Narcotics Officers. I've got their document on screen. This is a PDF from their campaign that is their talking point sheet. And the first thing you can notice about the talking point sheet, especially if you compare it to some of my graphics of the talking points, is that their graphic design capabilities seem to match their understanding of logic and reason. Because this is one of the worst things. They've got a bunch of graphics here that aren't lined up, and they're blurry as hell. Like they took low-res clips off the internet and, you know, and then blew them up large. So they're blurry, and the graphics overlay some of the words here on the side so you can't quite read everything. I mean, it's just a mess. But ignoring that for the moment, let's go on to the actual content of this fact sheet, so to speak. First of all, they want to point out that there's no established driving rules for marijuana impairment in Measure 91. That's right. Doesn't need them. Because, you know, driving under the influence of marijuana is already illegal. cops already bust people for marijuana DUI. In fact, Josh Marquis, who'll be arguing the No on 91 case, recently secured a conviction for a marijuana DUI of a 19-year-old man that even Josh Marquis said was probably not high. Let me hit this one. Speed Limit brings this up in the chat room that Josh Marquis is going to hammer Measure 91 on the section that lets weed into prison. I hope he brings that up because Anthony will shut him down so quick. These are two lies. I mean, outright lies that the No on 91 campaign is using. One is they say that there's a section 55 in Measure 91 that makes it only a ticket to smuggle weed into prison. It adds a ticket for accidentally bringing your weed into prison. There's already a Class C felony for smuggling weed into prison knowingly. What this was say you're a guard and you smoked some pot on the weekend and you left some weed in your pocket, and then you go to work on Monday and you've got weed. They added this ticket so that the guy who accidentally brought his weed in, who wasn't trying to smuggle it, he just accidentally brought it in, couldn't say, oh, gee, it was just an accident, but hey, Measure 91 makes it legal for me to possess this. Or on the other hand, make it so this poor guy who just accidentally brought his small bit of stash to work gets a felony when he wasn't really trying to smuggle weed into prison. It's such an egregious lie on the No on 91 campaign. And the other egregious lie they're using is one that's in here. No restrictions on marketing and advertising for marijuana edibles that are appealing to kids. Section 7 of Measure 91 explicitly gives the Oregon Liquor Control Commission all the power they need to regulate or prohibit any advertising. So right there, there's two lies that they are directly using. Here's another one that they've got. No legitimate way to regulate amount, as there's no limit on number of growers or number of, and we don't know the rest because it goes underneath the logo there. Again, Measure 91 doesn't codify any hard limits on these things, but gives the Oregon Liquor Control Commission all the power they need to limit the number of licenses in any particular locality. Also gives localities the ability to zone for appropriate locations. Says there's no THC potency testing requirements. But again, it gives OLCC all the power they need to set those limits. Here's some of their facts. Today's marijuana is 300 to 800% more potent than marijuana of years ago. This is not the same Woodstock weed that baby boomers and Generation Xers used. I love that they're still using the not the Woodstock weed argument. Even in Oregon, where there are 69,000 people who are medical marijuana patients using this weed, and the sky hasn't fallen. Folks, here's the perfect answer to this potent weed myth. High is high. High is high. And whether you get there slowly by smoking a joint, you get there quickly by doing a dab, or you get there really quickly with a pill of Marinol that's 100% potent and legal, it doesn't matter. High is high. Number two, they've got with Measure 91, the amount each person can possess and legally grow in their home is significant and concerning. And they worry about, oh, you can have a half pound of weed at the home and a pound of edibles and a six pack of tinctures and an ounce of concentrates and four plants. Well, guess what, guys? Those are the limits in Washington and Colorado. In Washington and Colorado, you can have an ounce outside the home, so can you in Oregon. In Oregon, you can have 8 ounces in the home. In Colorado, you can have an unlimited amount in the home. The unlimited amount in the home because you can have all the results of your harvests. They've also got the 16 ounces of edibles, exactly the same amount you can have in Washington, and less than you can have in Colorado, because Colorado, they go by an ounce of THC in the edible, not the weight of the edible. It can be 4 pounds of edibles. You don't know. How would the cops know? Same thing with the tinctures. We're going to allow the same 72 ounces Washington allows. Colorado allows an ounce of THC in any amount of liquid. So again, it could be 6 gallons. That you could have at home, just as long as you only have 1 ounce of THC in the whole thing. And again, how's any cop going to know? We get 4 plants in Oregon. Now, they didn't allow home grow in Washington. That's true. But in Colorado, they allowed home grow of 6 plants. So we got 2 fewer plants than they do in Colorado. And finally, concentrates. Yes, in Washington, they get 1/4 ounce of concentrates and we get 1/4 ounce. But Colorado allows, once again, 1 ounce of THC in the concentrates. So if it's a 75% concentrate, then you could have 1 ounce and 1/4 or whatever the math works out to. So you could actually have less concentrates in Oregon than you can in Colorado. These are not extreme amounts. These are the kind of amounts you need to deter people from going out and shopping on the black market. They also consider, you know, with Measure 91, there's no established rules for what is considered intoxicating driving for marijuana. Really? You don't think that there's any rules about intoxicated driving now? This is ridiculous. How are we busting people for driving under the influence now? How does that happen? And they also claim that traffic fatalities involving drivers testing positive for marijuana have increased 100% in Colorado. Well, again, because now people have marijuana in their systems in Colorado. It doesn't mean they were high when they wrecked. It doesn't mean that they got that the high caused the wreck. If I'm a passenger in someone's car and I'm high and someone T-bones the car and I die, I'm a marijuana-involved traffic fatality, even though I was just sitting there. And these drivers testing positive, same thing. The driver could have marijuana in his system but not be high. And if a drunk runs into him and kills him, that's a marijuana-related traffic fatality. Here they go with the marijuana edible scare, the cookies, candy bars, brownies, flavored drinks, and it's hard to read the rest of it because the pictures of these two kids who died are covering up the lettering. The marijuana edibles thing, I will admit, was not handled well by Colorado coming out of the gate. And part of the problem with it is that unlike alcohol prohibition, when we ended alcohol prohibition, the first alcohol that was available was 3-2 beer. But under marijuana prohibition, the only way we've gotten forward is through medical marijuana. And medical marijuana demands the most potent products. So now we've got all these newbies coming into legalized marijuana being offered the most powerful medical marijuana products that have ever existed. Now, once again, high is high, right? High is high, but you can take too much at one time and you can end up with negative effects. But again, it's not going to kill you. And if you don't regulate and allow these marijuana edibles and get them tested for potency and labeled, it doesn't mean they go away. Marijuana edibles will still exist. People will just make them at home and you won't have any way of controlling or labeling them whatsoever. And this idea, part of their idea is that, oh my God, obviously these manufacturers are making gummy bears to appeal to kids. I'm a 46-year-old man. I eat 2 bags of gummy bears a week. I love gummy bears and so do a lot of adults. These things are sold at adults-only stores. And they're flying off the shelves. Kids aren't buying them. Kids aren't driving that market. The edibles market is aimed for adults because they're the only people who can buy them. And then finally, they've got this lowering the perception of harm. Actually, the perception of harm in Colorado is lower among the kids than it is in the United States in general. And the access among kids in Colorado is harder than the access for U.S. kids in general. It's so sad how desperate these prohibitionists have become and how tired and pedestrian their talking points are. You'll see it tonight on the Measure 91 debate. The Great Oregon Pot Debate is live at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time. That's 1.5 hours from now. And you'll find it on the web at oregonlive.com/marijuana. That's all the time we got for Hour 1, but stay tuned for Hour 2. We'll talk more about the Measure 91 debate, and also I've got a new video from High Times on how to take a dab, just in case you don't know. For everyone here at 420radio.org, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.